everybody. I'm Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet, about to be joined by Ken Weeb from the Winnipeg Free Press. Together we are Kenny and Rennie. This is the Kenny and Rennie post-game show. After the day in which the Jets clinch home ice advantage in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, we know that they're playing the Colorado Avalanche. We know now that they are starting at home here in Winnipeg, getting what I think for them, despite the fact you know how I feel about the Colorado Avalanche and their chances against the Winnipeg Jets, the fact that you've got a line like Nathan MacKinnon's with the capability of that line, and that, you know, I think there's not a lot of depth on that team, to be able to properly match that line is going to be important in that series. So for the Winnipeg Jets, who not that long ago looked like there would be no, hey, Rennie is the guy who said it to you, Jet, forget about it. Jets have no chance. Focus on just doing the right things. Don't focus on home ice advantage because it's not happening. Well, it happened, ladies and gentlemen. It absolutely happened. And now the Winnipeg Jets, 4 games, 1-2 and 5-7, if needed, will have that home ice advantage, that last change, which I think will be extremely important because Nathan MacKinnon, although I don't know from what I saw the last game that they played, I don't know that he fared any better against the fourth line or the second line or the first line, but he's going to get a healthy dose of Adam Lowry and that third line. He may be one of the best players in the league. Who knows? He may win the Hart Trophy this year, Nathan MacKinnon. He is going to go up against, for my money, the best third line in the NHL right now, and we'll see how that turns out. Sometimes it doesn't matter how good you are when you're against a big giant eraser. It can make it that it's hard to put stuff on the stat sheet. Anyway, to the game here tonight, I thought, so clearly this game isn't what we saw against Colorado. It's not what we saw against the Dallas Stars. To me, this isn't necessarily, and I won't even say necessarily, for the most part, this isn't the bonus blueprint. Now, what the Winnipeg Jets are going to try to ride from this point on into the playoffs, and for the rest of the playoffs, as long as that takes them, they want to play the blueprint. That's the thing they believe is going to give them success. You heard the Dallas Stars talk about it after they lost to the Winnipeg Jets. That's Rick Bonus hockey. That's the kind of hockey they want to play. I don't know that we saw that here tonight, but I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing for the Jets not to be able to win games other ways. Now, I'll say this about the Seattle Kraken. The three games that they played the Winnipeg Jets this year, for the most part, were hotly contested games. They win one, the Jets win two. All three of the games, in my estimation, were close games. And I think that the Seattle Kraken earned that, okay? This isn't the Jets not being at the top of their game. This is the Seattle Kraken playing the Jets well. I would suggest that if you were a team looking at how to, you know, maybe alleviate the pressure that the Jets are able to create, the Seattle Kraken are a team I would take a look at. I thought they did a really good job of not allowing the Jets to set up that insane pressure game. I thought they did. You'll see there was a lot of cutbacks there when the Jets try to pressure the puck and, you know, trap it off into the corner in the offensive zone. There was a lot of reversing the puck by Seattle and getting it over to the other side of the ice, making the Jets skate all over the ice, not just trapping you in one spot, but saying, okay, all your guys are over here trying to trap. Well, we're going to get the puck in the other side. And now they got to go all the way across the ice to go pressure that guy. I thought they did a good job of that. So it's another way of saying, I don't think the Seattle Kraken, we're going to let the Jets play that pressure game that you saw against the Colorado Avalanche, play the pressure game you saw against the Dallas Stars. So the Jets needed to find another way to win this game. And to me, it's as simple as this. I don't think they abandoned their structure. I think they still did a lot of the things that mark the, like, this isn't a perfect facsimile of the Rick Bonus blueprint, but they're not entirely departing from it. They're still sticking with it in a lot of ideology, a lot of the way that they approach their offense. But I take a look at this, and if you're going to take the lineup of the Seattle Kraken and you're going to hold it up beside the Winnipeg Jets lineup, and you're going to say, okay, these two teams are going to play a specific style of game, and it's going to be very dependent on who can get more out of their offensive players. Well, the Winnipeg Jets are typically going to win that game. What the Jets did really, really well, and this is another reason why I'll say I like the way the Winnipeg Jets won this game tonight. It's not the repeatable goals that we saw in the past from the Jets. The shots from the point, the tip-ins, all that kind of stuff. Those have been, you know, real hallmarks of the Jets offense for a number of games now. That kind of disappeared on this night. But think back to the St. Louis Blues beating the Winnipeg Jets in the 2019 playoffs. They exploited a play that creates a lot of confusion against the Winnipeg Jets. It's that low to high play, right? You get it, get your defenseman, throw it around the boards, get it to a guy so all the Jets players are looking towards the point, and then all of a sudden they're looking behind the net, and then all of a sudden the puck comes from low to high, from behind the net to the front of the net, and you know the Jets defenders get looking around and looking in different directions. And then all of a sudden the puck is in the back of the net. The Jets did that to a T on this night. They did it on the first goal where Mark Scheifele makes that gorgeous pass to Kyle Connor. Everyone's looking down at Mark Scheifele. They're not working or they're not looking at where Kyle Connor is. Kyle Connor positions himself perfectly so that if Mark Scheifele can make that pass through the skates of the defender, it's on his stick and it's in the back of the net. Boom. It's 1-0. The next goal that we see out of this team that Kyle Connor scores is just another perfect example of getting everyone looking in one direction and then going where they're not. Kyle Connor talked about it after the game, getting lost, kind of getting hidden. He really dug into what happened on that second goal, the kind of defense that Seattle plays and the blind spots that it creates. Puck goes over to the side, up to the top to Josh Morrissey on the opposite side of the ice from where Kyle Connor is. He throws it down to Mark Scheifele. Mark Scheifele throws it back up to him. So what happens to all the defenders? They get looking at Josh Morrissey. Then they get looking at Mark Scheifele, then back up to Josh Morrissey. And then all of a sudden, Josh, with the fake shot, fires it over to Kyle Connor. Nobody expects him to be there because he's found the blind spot. They catch them looking in the wrong direction. It's in the back of the net. Third goal, it's off the rush. That's just a nice off the rush goal, a nice stick-to-itiveness by Nikolai Ehlers in that play. The final goal, it's another one of these scenarios where they use that same philosophy against this team. Nikolai Ehlers, they're moving the puck all around the ice. It goes grinding underneath the net, up around the boards, over the defenseman, who just without looking fires it straight over to Nikolai Ehlers. And now all of a sudden, Nikolai Ehlers has the puck far from the net, albeit, but with all kinds of time. And as he skates towards the net, every Seattle player is moving across the ice to try and close off the space that he has so he doesn't just walk straight in and score. And what happens as they all go from looking to one side of the ice to the other and get sucked in there? Tyler Toffoli comes skating across the grain. He gets the pass from Nick Ehlers. Another situation where everyone on the ice now has to turn their heads and look in the opposite direction. And because he's going against the grain, Tyler Toffoli catches everyone, including the goaltender, going in the wrong direction. And then wide open net, boom, Bob's your uncle. The Winnipeg Jets win the game 4-3. That's the game winner. But it's the same philosophy for three of the four goals is essentially getting, it's misdirection. It's look over here. And as you look over here, one of our guys sneaks in underneath cover and then you get the puck to them. And all of a sudden it's in the back of the net. I talk all the time about repeatable goals. These are repeatable goals in the playoffs. And I would say this probably isn't the way that you want to win games against a team like the Colorado Avalanche, because the Colorado Avalanche, I think you're kind of playing into their strengths if you head down this road. I don't think this is the kind of offense that is going to win you series against the Dallas Stars or the Vegas Golden Knights or the LA Kings. But I do think if you end up running into a team like the Edmonton Oilers or the Vancouver Canucks, this is effective offense that you will be able to use in those series. So to me, not the Rick Bonus blueprint, but I don't take this as the Winnipeg Jets stepping away from what's worked for them. I take this as a team not allowing them to get to that game and saying, okay, we need to adapt. So this one is for the crowd, the found a way to win crowd. I know there's a lot of you out there. I get these calls all the time from people. How about that? They found a way to win. A lot of times I think that's excuses for bad play and the Jets just pulling one out of the fire. I don't like those kind of games because it's bad habits. This wasn't a bad habit game. Did they manage the puck the best that they could throughout a good chunk of this game? No, but I think that to a degree, there's guys like Brandon Tanev chasing you down. There's a little bit of a pressure aspect to that, to being forced to make mistakes. But the Winnipeg Jets altered their game to another winning philosophy that wasn't necessarily buttoned down Rick Bonus blueprint hockey, but having that ability to change and win a game in a different way with repeatable style goals that are just of a different fashion, I think bodes well for this team heading into the playoffs. So that's my take on this whole thing. Time to bring in the man with the best music in the business for his take on the whole thing. Here comes Kenny, everybody. Kenny, it's great to see you home, and no doubt, whether home or away, you're always dressed like a million bucks as a Vittorio Rossi, man. I don't know who put together that shirt and tie combo with the jacket, but they know what they're talking about. I got a feeling I may know someone who may have something to do with that, and on an completely unrelated note, if you want to look like a guy like Kenny or maybe even Rennie on a night like tonight, head on down to Vittorio Rossi on Corden Avenue. Walk in, loudly proclaim Kenny and Rennie sent you. Ask for Frankie and the boys. They will do you up right. Lauren Finley went down there and sent me a picture today of the shirt and tie combo that they set him up with down there. Looked like a million bucks, I told him. We appreciate that. And as always, for the folks who are heading down there, if you make sure to let them know that Kenny and Rennie sent you, that always means a lot. Ken, I went to the buffet in a major way here, and that's going to grind on a lot of people because a lot of people are just showing up here 5 minutes late hoping that's going to be time for you to be on. I just couldn't help myself. I got such a good explanation from Kyle Connor about some of the things in the misdirection that the Jets used on this night. What did you see in this game? I don't know that this was the same kind of game that we were seeing from or that we saw from this team against Dallas or against Colorado, but I felt that it was effective, and I think that this is a good game for them to get under their belt heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't maybe quite as locked down or buttoned down as those two games, but I mean, the good folks at Natural Stat Trick only had Seattle down for 5 high danger chances in the game, so I mean, that would still be a pretty tidy defensive effort. Now, I would say there were a couple of loose plays for sure. Anytime there's a 2-on-1 and a 2-on-0 on the same shift, I would say that probably qualifies a significant breakdown. but for the most part, I think the Jets, this is what I saw. I mean, in the first and third, I saw the same kind of commitment level as the games in Dallas and Colorado or in Denver. But I mean, I would say that the second period was pretty loose. And I mean, you and I could definitely tell by the answer that Rick Bonus gave. I mean, it was very dismissive. He said that was all puck management. And I mean, they kind of got a little bit, I don't know if lackadaisical, that's probably not the right word, but they certainly weren't as sharp as usual. But for the most part, you know, one thing in talking to, you know, some of the folks who are around the Kraken regularly, I mean, they don't score easily. So, you know, when a team doesn't score easily, sometimes you can get away with maybe a couple of miscues that, as you mentioned, I mean, some of those turnovers are odd man rushes against, you know, Vegas or Dallas or even Colorado. Those could end up in the back of the net with a little bit more regularity maybe, but for the most part, I think that the commitment in the first and third were very similar, to what we saw, maybe not quite as locked down, but I mean, for the most part, I thought that they were pretty sound, in those two periods. So 2 out of 3, I would say, were pretty good, but the middle period is the one again, in the second period, Sean, has been a problem for the Jets this year, right? I mean, that's something that especially in road games, they're not going to be able to afford those types of miscues, I would say. But offensively, I mean, you talked about it with, you know, with Rick, and I assume at the beginning, this is the first time really that the top two lines are feeling like they're in unison, the top two scoring lines. So for me, that's a humongous revelation for the Jets. And, you know, for the folks who, yeah, again, this is not victory lap territory for Rick Bowness or anybody else. Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor and Gabriel Vilardi are managing just fine. And oh, by the way, Nikolaj Ehlers is playing his best hockey beside Sean Monahan. And Tyler Toffoli has looked a little bit more rejuvenated for me, Sean. And then after that, I mean, I thought that, you know, we'll get into it a little bit more later on. But so a bunch of people are asking. We don't have an update on Morgan Barron. I asked Rick Bowness for one. He said that he would know more on Wednesday. Whatever that means, we're not sure. It looked like he went into the boards kind of awkwardly. I can't imagine that Morgan Barron plays on Thursday. There's no reason for him to play, even if he's just a little bit banged up. Just put David Gustafson back in the lineup, give him a few days to get ready for game one, and then we'll see what happens from there. But, you know, overall, a lot of good from the Jets in the game. And I like the way that this is what I like the most about the game for Winnipeg, Sean. After being very flat in the second, they found a way to get back on track in the third, and they didn't kind of abandon ship kind of idea. I thought they got back to structure in the third. Obviously, took advantage and you know, got the lead and just held on to it from there. So anyways, a lot of good in the game, but certainly some areas to clean up.
It's one of the things that I talked about, that I wrote into the explanation of this video. I mean, outside of the third period in Nashville, this to me is the Jets winning the third period in six of their last seven games. I mean, and they won, I believe they won the third period in the game against the Oilers before that. So that we're talking about seven of their last nine. Their ability to kind of make sure that they're at their best at what typically turns out to be the most crucial time of the game, especially if you're in close games, right? If you're keeping games close like that, you know, hey, it's all fine and dandy if you're, you know, the best team in the third period, you're down 7-0 and you come back and you get a couple of goals. But the Jets are basically able to keep games close and then find a way to be the team that, you know, I liken it like this, Ken. I always talked about that 2015 series and all the people who would tell me that the Jets, who lost four straight to the Anaheim Ducks, were like, well, they were right there and that could have been a different series and all that kind of stuff. And what I saw in that series was an Anaheim Ducks team that those games were always close, and I likened it to two runners coming around the bend with that last kick, and that one runner kind of turning to the other one, giving him a wink, and then just finding a gear that the other team didn't have. That's what I saw back then from the Anaheim Ducks in that series. That's what I'm seeing from the Winnipeg Jets now. Like, they can play a team and it can be a close scenario, and that's what we saw tonight. It was a close game for the vast majority of the game, and then when it's most crucial, that's when the Jets are able to find that little bit of an extra gear and come out on top. I think that that is one of those things that really has them feeling locked down, no doubt. I want you to dig into Kyle Connor a little bit more and give me an idea of what you think has him playing maybe his best. I know at the beginning of the year he was scoring quite a bit, and I don't know if I think he may think it's his best hockey of the year that he's playing right now. I'm not saying it is or it isn't. I do know he went on a pretty darn good stretch, but what do you think has him looking as good as he does right now?
Yeah, just quickly to tie a bow on the 2015, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, the Ducks were, for the farce, they were the superior team in all fronts, but I mean, Jets were leading and had opportunities in all three of those games, but they just couldn't get over the top, right? And I think game two, Andrew Ladd takes a penalty in overtime that the Ducks score on. You know, a road team underdog wins game two, who knows? But I agree with you. I mean, there was no doubt that Kessler, Getzlaff, Perry, I mean, there's no doubt who the better team was. And I think it's a good summation in saying that, you know, the little brother was, you know, punching up on the big brother, and then the big brother finally said, hey, thanks for playing, and we'll see. We'll catch you a bit later on. You got a little bit of work to do. And, you know, at the time, Paul Maurice talked about having Mark Scheifele go up against Kessler and Getzlaff, and that he was going to lose the matchup, but it was going to pay off for him down the road, Sean. And we're seeing that, and we did see it. So in terms of Kyle Connor, I think that the Rick hit the nail on the head. And again, like some people say, like, who cares what the coach is saying? To me, Rick Bowness made it very clear that it's not just Kyle scoring right now or getting assists with his line mates. It's his effort in his 200-foot game that has been so noticeable in this stretch of time since he's been back together with Mark Scheifele. And we saw it at portions with Sean Monahan also. I just think that he's a little bit more locked in. You know, and Sean, you could hear it kind of in his voice when both you and I were asking him questions today. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he's got a burn mark. It looks like he took a stick in the nose. Obviously, he had, you know, wasn't bleeding, but it was, you know, it seems like he's going to the dirty areas. I like the way he's making smart plays, Sean. I think the biggest thing for me going back to the Dallas game, there were times where the Jets skilled players had been turning pucks over in the neutral zone and at both blue lines, offensive and defensive, that were getting or leading directly to goals against. And you're seeing just smarter plays being made, more conservative plays by players like Kyle Connor. And right now, I really just think that he is kind of locked in. I know nobody liked hearing about it at the time and, oh, not excuses. I mean, this is a guy who was injured, Sean, for the first time in his career, missing 16 games. It's a serious knee injury. It took him a while to get more comfortable. You know, we know where the injury was suffered. It was in the, you know, high danger area in front of the net on that knee on knee from Ryan Strome. Now he's going to those spots. He's looking comfortable. And the biggest thing for me, Sean, is he's moving. He's moving his feet. He looks explosive again. And the other thing that's really impressive is his finish. I mean, it wasn't quite drop step Gabriel Vilardi on the second one, on the pass that from Josh Morrissey that you eloquently described in the opening. But man, that is a very patient play. And like, it's like, it was almost like a Jordan double clutch. Like, it's like he paused for that second and then he made Grubauer open up a spot that wasn't there. Kyle telling you directly, Sean, he was going backdoor to Vilardi. He saw Grubauer cheated. And there it is. It's in the back of the net. And, you know, I also loved his quote. We've talked a lot and debated about those two guys playing together. Kyle saying that Mark makes that pass in his sleep. Like, that's classic. I mean, people that said, oh, I haven't seen any chemistry with Scheifele and Kyle Connor. Adam Larson's legs were not open for very long, Sean, for that puck to be passed through them and onto the tape of Kyle Connor. And Sean, there was one more play in the period that was almost, you know, it would have given him the hat trick. They were on a 2-on-1, and Mark made a very crisp pass that went through the skates of a defender of the Kraken. It was a forward on the back check. The only reason Kyle missed it is because he couldn't see it until the last second, right? That's one of those plays where the pass was actually pretty good, but the player on the 2-on-1 rush can't see the puck until it's kind of almost too late. Today. So, I mean, I thought his game was tremendous. This is the kind of effort that Kyle Connor is going to need to have. I mean, we've talked so much about the importance of Scheifele and Josh Morrissey and Nikolaj Ehlers for that matter, but Kyle Connor's got to be rolling the way he was in that Oilers series. Tonight, Sean, 22 shifts for 21-14, two goals, three shots on net, five attempts, one takeaway. I really liked his game. I mean, what are you seeing? I assume you're seeing most of the same things here.
I'm going to say yes, and I want to get into this, but this is one of the best headband requests I have ever seen on the show, T-Mac.
Beautiful.
Arizona mullet headband to honor the Coyotes' final game tomorrow. This is bang on. This is a great idea. So let's get into it here. And since we're talking about Kyle Connor, I know we cut the flow, but maybe I'll look a little bit like Kyle Connor from earlier this season if I put the mullet on. So let's do it, folks. So let's make it a Sean's headband version of the Kenny and Rennie show. Ken, I picked this up at the first ever Coyotes game at Mullet Arena. You were there. It's actually in hindsight, looking at that situation and knowing they were going to be like, we knew even if things worked out and they got that arena done last year, it was going to be 5 years in that arena. It's probably crazy that it even lasted this long, 2 years like this, but well done with the headband request. I absolutely love it. Let's get back to Kyle Connor. From what I saw from Kyle Connor, and I've said this before, I think that there was a little bit of feeling between he and Mark Scheifele that I think they were kind of waiting for one another to do something. Glenn Fricker says Casey has been playing way better since he was put on the second line for a bit. So Glenn Fricker is going exactly where I'm going for this. I've said this in the past and I think it's shown well. Kyle Connor, I think the natural coming up of him into the Winnipeg Jets system where he played on a line with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele can create a dynamic and a little bit of a culture where maybe just maybe you play a little bit of second fiddle or maybe you rely on those people, because that's how Kyle Connor would have came into this league. He would have really relied on Blake Wheeler. He would have really relied on Mark Scheifele to kind of, you know, just take care of business, get him in the puck. I'm just going to go over here. You guys rag the puck. You guys grind along the boards. I'm talking in the peak days of those players. And I'm just going to get open and I'm going to be your finisher, right? So I think when you've got that dynamic that has existed with you in the past, not saying it hasn't evolved, but sometimes you can go back to certain things. And what I felt like I was seeing from Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele at a lot of points this year was the two players just kind of one waiting for the other. I think moving Kyle Connor to the second line, and I'd said this before, I don't know why coaches would be scared of this. I'd said this when he got on a line with Pierre-Luc Dubois. Kyle Connor is a good enough player, and you should be confident in him as a coach to say, I think we could put Kyle Connor on a line, and he can drive that line. And I think what happened was he got moved down to that second line alongside Sean Monahan, who I just think is like slipping into like a nice bath or a warm blanket or something like that, or, you know, just to play with, because he's always kind of doing the right things. He can set you up with a good pass, but he's playing defensively. And I think it just kind of allowed Kyle Connor to maybe take a little bit of the ownership of the offense on that line and kind of rediscover both the defensive part of the game, but also kind of driving the offense on a line. And I think that that's just one of those awakening moments where now you've taken that part of him. And if you're a coach, you're seeing that, right? But you're still not seeing what you need on the other lines. And now you feel like, okay, I can send him back up to Mark, because now I think what's going to happen is Kyle Connor is coming back with the mindset of a driver on this line. And if you are being the driver on a line with Mark Scheifele, it's not going to take that long, I believe, that Mark Scheifele is not going to sit back and watch someone else be the driver on his line. Tonight, I thought they were phenomenal. I thought the way that Mark Scheifele kind of took control of that puck, he looked dangerous. Just sometimes it's just in the way that he stick handles the puck. You could just tell it's so dangerous. He's so deceptive. He's so hard to get off the puck. His low to high work, passing it to the front. And I talked about that assist that he set up for Kyle Connor, but there was one shift, Ken, where he set him up three times where he just kept getting the puck to the back of the net. And it's like, how do you pass it to the same player three times in one shift in a dangerous spot? Like, that's should be what everybody is looking for. But it's just the subtleties of that. There was another pass that Mark Scheifele made that was actually through the legs on a 2-on-1. It was on Kyle Connor's stick. And I think it's one of those situations, as good as these guys are, Kyle Connor is almost surprised by the fact that the puck is on his stick and he doesn't get it into the wide open net. Mark Scheifele, I think, I said it on CJOB before the show, he was my player to watch, because I'm seeing that line be a lot more responsible defensively, but I want to know if they can play the defense and then add that element of offense to it. I think we saw that tonight. I think it starts exactly like Glenn Fricker had said with Kyle Connor going down to that line, kind of approaching it from a different mentality, bringing that mentality back onto a line with Mark Scheifele. And now you've got two guys who are just absolutely trying to drive that line between the two of them, clicking, kind of moving at the same speed, the same pace, and feeling an urgency that I just don't think was there before that, which can... I'm going to say at this stage, let's give it the Cambrian Credit Union undoing the move from Kyle Connor to the second line and putting him back onto a line with Mark Scheifele is looking very much like it's trying to pay off. And hey, if you're looking to pay off high interest credit cards or debt, we suggest you go to talk to our friends at Cambrian Credit Union about their payoff loan. They can show you how taking out a loan to pay off your debt actually gets you debt-free faster, and you can save thousands of dollars. Go to cambrian.mb.ca to book an appointment online. Ken, I want to dig into the coaches a little bit here. Rick Bowness has taken a lot of flack over how he uses the lines. I've seen a lot of people talk about it, and they'll suggest that he, as a coach, is a terrible, terrible coach when it comes to line utilization and things like that. I think that it is... Now it came, it's happened. And I kind of poked a little bit of a jab at the everything's going to be fine crew at the beginning of the last podcast, because it's turned out fine. They had to get it right sooner or later. And it's happened, but the window that this team had to turn things on, 8 games left in the season after a 6-game losing streak. Honestly, who saw the Jets being where they are right now, the way things were going after that 6-game losing streak? I'm not saying they couldn't have played better or whatever, but last 2 games before this were probably their best 2 games back to back, and they get going like this. I want you to kind of wax poetic a little bit about Rick Bowness and his coaching staff and the absolute getting every note right symphony that this coaching staff has done in a fairly short amount of time to turn this team from a team that looked like it was broken to a team now that looks like it may be playing its near best hockey of the season at the perfect time of the season.
Yeah, I mean, going on that road trip, or, you know, trying to come in and come out of it, finishing off the homestand with LA rolling into town, Sean, I mean, the list of priorities was pretty simple. I mean, at the top of that list was finding structure defensively again, recommitment to December. Let's call it that, December, January. That has happened. They needed to reconstruct the top six to get 2 scoring lines going at the same time. By the way, there it is. I mean, people were saying, oh, what's Rick talking about when he said Ehlers, Monahan, and Toffoli were very good until Toffoli sat out the game with a sickness and then needed some time to get rolling. Well, they're basically scoring every single night. I mean, Rick stood at the podium and said on the road trip, you know, I really like that line. And he repeated it basically every single day. And he repeated it by saying, you know, they're scoring a goal a game and we'd like to get them back to that. Oh, that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, and they're creating more. And I love it, Sean. Today, Nikolaj Ehlers, immediately when was asked how good his line has been, what's been making it good, he said to me right away, we were on the ice for 2 goals against. So the self-correction and the ability to give honest assessments is a humongous part of this. I mean, a lot of that is coaching, but also that's players being receptive to coaching, Sean. And not just Ehlers. You saw it. You were standing right there. Kyle Connor said the exact same thing, right? Kyle Connor talked about looking inward and trying to find a way to get back to the level that made them good for a long time. Even Rick Bowness saying it today. Rick Bowness saying, you know, we weren't as bad as we were during the streak, but like the commitment to the structure is there. So, and then too, what's next? Okay, well, the power play. Well, they got Vilardi back, and yeah, there was an incredibly long dry spell. We're well aware of that, but it's been clicking at times. I mean, not always. But it doesn't have to score every single time, and it's not going to. Even the best power plays aren't going to do that. But it has to supply some momentum, and that's what it's doing. We talked about it before for months, Sean. The Jets probably can't survive a bad penalty kill and a bad power play if they want to win multiple rounds. But both of them are sort of starting to get a little bit better. I mean, is it perfect? No, but there's signs that they're turning the corner. They found a fourth line that works. You know, the third line has always kind of been their secret sauce, as you mentioned. Now the top six is working. You know, they, even though Nate Schmidt, I think, you know, for my money, he's had a pretty solid year, Sean. But the Jets coaching staff was thinking they needed a different element. So late in the year, Logan Stanley, this is the first time this year he's played 5 consecutive games this season. Right? This was a guy who sat out 43 of the first 53 games as a healthy scratch. He's played five in a row, including games against two playoff teams that the Jets could see in the playoffs in the Central Division. That third pairing is starting to, you know, get themselves into a groove, and Logan Stanley is playing a physical style. Again, wallpapers Pierre-Edouard Belmar with the big hit in the game. You know, Dylan Samberg. It's pretty difficult, Sean, to switch to being a right side defenseman as a left shot guy when you've been playing most of your time in the NHL on the left side. But he's done a nice job that way. I mean, Neil Pionk had a couple hiccups today. Again, no doubt he overskated the puck on the tying goal. I get it. But that wasn't only Pionk. There were a litany of mistakes on that play. Josh Morrissey thought the Jets were going to be getting north, and he was joining the rush, which is what the Jets are instructed to do. You know, Sean Monahan got kind of sealed off along the boards by two players. And that play doesn't happen at all, Sean, if Toffoli gets the puck in deep at the offensive zone, right? And yeah. Then, Pionk is the last person on the screen that allows the 2-on-0. But if that puck gets deep, like Tyler Toffoli gets that puck deep, like, what, 98 out of 100 times, probably? But that time he didn't. And then it ended up in the back of the net. And again, I'm not blaming Tyler Toffoli, but this is a really smart guy, a Stanley Cup champion, a proven performer that made a mistake. Like, that's the kind of mistake in a series you give the other team some life, right? So, you know, again, he will know that that's a play he's got to get deep also. But anyways, long-winded way of saying the Jets basically, you said it to Rick, like if they had a checklist of five bullet points, they've basically checked all five off currently. I mean, you could say they've checked four off in pen and one off in pencil if you want to say special teams are still a work in progress. But guess what? Special teams are always a work in progress. You can have the best power play in the National Hockey League during the season, be operating at close to 40%. You're still going to need to stay sharp in the playoffs, and you're probably most likely not going to operate at that level. But you need to get momentum, and you need to get cash in some timely goals. So I'm with you. For me, you know, there's been lots of people throwing flack at different coaches or different members of the coaching staff during the during the course of the season. But yeah, it's a matter of everyone has a job to do. Rick was very complimentary of the staff when you asked them about him, and they've done a great job. It's an exceptional staff. We've said it before. I mean, Scott Arneil is a NHL head coach in waiting. Brad Lauer had great success at the Western Hockey League level, helping the Edmonton Oil Kings win the Western Hockey League. These are a bunch of smart guys. Marty Johnson doing a nice job. You know, video coaches, Matty Prefontaine, James Cochran, and Wade Flaherty doesn't get enough love around the National Hockey League for the job that he's done with the goaltender in tandem, which, you know, they're still in the lead for the Jennings going into the last game of the year. I believe it's a 3-goal buffer over the Florida Panthers. Who, you know, we're going to salute the Florida Panthers quickly. We know, I know some people feel differently about Paul Maurice, Sean, but most teams that are, and again, we understand that they were not the traditional Cinderella eighth seed the year before they won the President's Trophy. So they're not the traditional Cinderella, but often if you lose in the Stanley Cup final, not only do you not get back there, you often miss the playoffs. And the Florida Panthers have won the Atlantic Division. So that's noteworthy of a stick tap here. But yeah, I mean, the Jets coaching staff's done a phenomenal job this year. And Sean, the last thing Rick Bonus says to you in the answer, not a lot of NHL coaches can take a month off in November and come back and your team is still cruising, right? I mean, it's just an exceptional job that they have done on the whole, and they are to be applauded for that.
I'm just going to say this quick because we got lots of stuff that we need
to move
on.
Sorry.
But give this coaching staff credit. This team, the very last kind of final frontier outside of playoff success was handling the drop that this team has right now. They didn't do it last year. It caught them by surprise. I think they thought, and we talked about this at end on the show, they showed the Winnipeg Jets how to properly compete, and the team essentially chose not to do it down the stretch last season. So they had a little bit of a drop this year, but take a look at the Winnipeg Jets 2019 2000 every year after that, the Winnipeg Jets start the season red hot. 2 years ago, best start in franchise history. They missed the playoffs. It is this team's it seems to be in their DNA to start really hot and do really well and then kind of fall off of a cliff at this stage right now. And maybe you want to give Paul Maurice credit for the year that they go into the Canadian division and they beat the Edmonton Oilers four straight because they went on a 7-game losing streak. And I think they lost 9 of 11 down the stretch at that time. But this was the kind of final frontier for things the Winnipeg Jets needed to correct was, you know, stumbling into the playoffs. And that's what this coaching staff has done. And I will say this, we didn't really talk that much about it because, I mean, everyone, here's the thing. Everyone has an opinion. Everyone is sitting on their couch. Everyone right now, someone out there is saying Cole Perfetti should be in the lineup. This is ridiculous. He's not in there. Everyone's going to have their opinion. I thought Rick Bowness, for a guy who had his team where he had them this season, took a lot of flack, and a lot of people basically said, like, were borderline saying that he's incompetent at running his lines. I mean, I'll say this, the fourth line for the most part this year, when he's wanted it to be who it's supposed to be, has been really good. The third line, he's assembled the best third line in the game, and give him credit. Kelly Moore was talking about it. I forget which game it was, but they ended up on a line together. He saw something and he never broke them up in spite of lots of calls by a lot of people out there to break up that third line. He never did. So he recognized about that line, which is the strength of this team, and kept it together. The fourth line is what it's supposed to be. You have to approach the idea that without Sean Monahan, without Tyler Toffoli, especially without Sean Monahan, the Winnipeg Jets may just not have had what it took to have two scoring lines. And so when you add everything finally as the season goes on towards the trade deadline, now you're just trying to find the consistency that exists there. I do think personally, and I've thought this as it was all unfolding, The fan base has been beating this coaching staff over the head about how it uses its lines. And they've essentially kind of landed where they were trying to get them to go the whole time. And now that it's working and everything seems to be in order, you can't really go all year and say this guy's a moron and doesn't know how to operate his lines when he's got this team doing everything everyone out there was hoping for and expecting them to do. He's got the first line going, like you said, second line going, third line we know is going to take care of business. Same thing with the fourth line. I would suggest put a little respect on Rick Bowness's name, on how he's handled this situation, because he's got the team to a place, despite the calls and suggestions that he has no idea what he's doing here. He's got them, it seems, right where he wants them to be, and it's kind of where he started, and he just played all the right notes and kind of moving and jockeying and line blending to get them to start giving him the results that he was expecting from those lines.
Pristine Roofing wake-up call territory.
Yeah, you give it.
It's wake-up time for those people crushing the coaching staff. You owe them an apology.
There you
51
go.
Wins. They're one win behind the best record the franchise has ever had in 2017-18. So
there you go.
For me, that's Pristine Roofing and Siding wake-up call territory.
Well,
somebody told you earlier. I had to give Cam Poitras one this afternoon. Jim Toth actually first gave it, and then I completed the message. So,
okay. It's time to give North End Rick the Pristine Roofing wake-up call at 1-204-981-6289. He's the guy you want to come down. I know, I had some people asking me lately about roofs. Pristine's who you want to call. Get North End Rick down there. He'll take a look at all your roofing, siding, and exterior needs. You can also call Pristine Roofing at 1-204-237-7663. And don't forget their Pay It Forward program, in which they are handing out a free roof to someone in need who can't take care of that. If you know someone who fits that bill, get a hold of Pristine Roofing and let them know who they are. And that person could win a free roof, which would be absolutely huge. Give Sweet Lou a shout out before we move on.
Yeah, right on. For folks who have realty needs they'd like to have met, buying, selling, curious what the house in the corner is going for, contact our main man, Lou Ferlin at Royal LePage Dynamic Realty. Tell him Kenny and Ready sent you. 204-791-9971 or at the office, 204-989-5000. His email is lou@louferlin.ca. That's L-O-U at L-O-U-F-U-R-L-A-N.ca. Lou Ferlin, excellent realtor, excellent human being, and excellent supporter of the community, including this podcast, for which we are grateful.
Okay, just a couple things quick. Marshawn Lynch in the house. You know who I thought of as soon as that happened was Dustin Byfuglien, right? How happy would Dustin Byfuglien had he still been playing if he would have looked up and saw Marshawn Lynch in the crowd? I've heard these really cool stories. Apparently one time I'd heard this from some of the staff. Dustin Byfuglien ran into Allen Iverson somewhere and was just so happy to meet him. I think Dustin Byfuglien's the kind of guy who looks at like specific athletes and is just kind of almost in awe, despite the fact that he was such a dominant athlete. And one I would guess he was a big fan of is Marshawn Lynch, because he Marshawn Lynched us in the 2018 playoffs, if you remember correctly, where he just answered the exact same answer to every single question that was thrown his way. Yeah, that was Marshawn, but Dustin Byfuglien's was, if we all just stick together, we'll be fine, right?
Right,
no matter what you asked them, what made that last goal trick, if we all just stick together, we'll be fine. So I thought, as soon as I saw Marshawn Lynch in the crowd there, I thought, man, oh man, that would have been I bet you Dustin Byfuglien would have loved that one.
Real appreciating real there. That's a classic. Both of those guys would have appreciated how the other played, and also how the other occasionally avoided the media. They would have been happy. They would have shared some bonding over that also.
I feel like the next game is going to be a bit of a nothing burger game, so I think that we should get into the Rutger conversation.
Well, hang on. Let's quickly, who would you start in net? Would you play Hellebuck or would you play Gib Brisson?
Oh, no. If they don't put in Brisson, like, come on, guys. Let's get it together here. I don't know what they're trying to accomplish with this already. Get Lauren Brisson in net.
How many call-ups would you play? Would you play any? Would you play Ville? Would you play Brad Lambert? Who would you play?
I don't know. You can take that conversation. To me, this is meaningless. This is all meaningless. It's a meaningless game. It's meaningless to get those guys into that situation.
Well, it wouldn't be meaningless to Brad Lambert to make his NHL debut. I mean, that's a different conversation. Hey, listen, you wouldn't want it in game 82?
If I'm Brad Lambert and I am going to head out, like, put it this way, if you go out and you go into game 82 and the other lineup is, you know, chock full of guys who, like, I don't know the situation that they're going to be in, but if you're basically playing your B teams and most of the guys that you're playing out there are resting, if I'm Brad Lambert and I go out and I score my first NHL goal in a game where people aren't really trying and they're mailing in, that doesn't mean a lot to me. I want my first game, and sometimes maybe you want to get it out of the way, and probably beggars can't be choosers, but if I'm a player and I'm going to make my NHL debut, I think that I want it to be under different circumstances. If I have my druthers, if I get my ideal situation, because you go into that game and if you don't do well, you think, okay, well, I didn't do well and no one out there is trying. Or if you go out and you have a phenomenal game, you go out there and you're like, yeah, but no one was trying. To me, I don't think that there's a lot of, if you're making your first start in game 82, I don't know that that's ideal.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think you're underselling it. And having covered the American League for 10 years, I mean, if you're, whether you're, he's a second year pro, but really still was a rookie. You worked your ass off for, you know, the entire AHL season. The reward at the end of the year is worth it. It's a carrot still for me. And I think it would be for him. And I'm curious about Ville Heinola. And again, I agree. I mean, does it mean a whole lot? No, but if you're Ville Heinola and you heard the coach say you would have been in the opening night lineup, I still think there's some value in getting into game 82. What if they need him in the playoffs at some point?
Yeah, but what's he going to learn in a nothing burger game? Like, you really think
it's not about learning, Sean. It's about just being rewarded for being able to battle back from the injury and spending the year in the minors. You know, under different circumstances, he would have been in the NHL the whole year.
I guess you and I just differ on how big of a reward that we think that is. Anyways, I want to move on from that. I want to have the conversation quickly about what happened in the East with the four teams, how things unraveled with Philadelphia pulling their goaltender early. Do you have a take on that? Because I got one I want to get in here.
Well, they had to. And as soon as Detroit got to extra time, they had to pull the goalie in order to try to win the game, I think. So, I mean, regulation, they needed a regulation win. They didn't have the tiebreaker, I think. So I've got no problem with it. But I mean, my issue in the Flyers game is that the Flyers got screwed by a terrible call that should have been a goal. The first goal should have counted. It was a clear cut miss by the officials. And this is one thing that bothers me, Sean. And I know it's not intentional, but we have video review in the NHL. How can that not go to video review and the right call be made? right? I mean, to me, that's insane. It's absolutely ridiculous that if you go to review, yes, the whistle went early. I understand that. But nothing that happened after the whistle was the result of the puck. The puck went in the net. It's a goal. Like, there's no disputing that. Who cares when the whistle went? It was an accidental whistle. It should have counted. The Flyers got shafted. And, you know, it doesn't, at the end of the day, I think it didn't matter anyway, right? Washington gets in because they win. But yeah, I mean, they benefit from an empty net goal, of course.
I wasn't going to go there with that. Okay. The Philadelphia Flyers, for those who didn't pick it up, there's a scenario by which the Detroit Red Wings go out and for the third straight game, send it to overtime. Like, this is like miracle territory of what they're pulling out. There's a draw with 7 seconds left. They're down in the offensive zone. Win the draw, goes back shot from the point. They tie it up with 3 or 4 seconds left. Send it to overtime as they fight to get into the postseason. Now, here's the deal. We knew that this was a very likely possibility if it's a tie game, that the Philadelphia Flyers were going to pull their goaltender, because in order for them to get into that playoff spot, they needed to beat the Washington Capitals in regulation time. So we knew that this was a possibility. And as we're watching this kind of play down, myself and Christian O'Mell were watching this, and Colin Jensen, my camera guy, we're seeing this go. Once the Detroit Red Wings score that goal, the Philadelphia Flyers are eliminated from playoff contention in that moment. Because they get that point, it's over for the Philadelphia Flyers. Now, I get that the Philadelphia Flyers are doing that, but as stewards of the game, if you are going to create a scenario by which you are going to do a drastic move that has a massive effect, and it's a massive effect, everybody, because when they pull the goaltender, if the Washington Capitals win that game, the Washington Capitals in that one fell swoop with an empty net goal eliminate the Detroit Red Wings, they eliminate the Philadelphia Flyers, and they eliminate the Pittsburgh Penguins. Okay. For the honor of the game, if you are going to do something like that, I think you have to be very careful with that situation. And what I'm referring to is the Philadelphia Flyers pull their goalie and the Washington Capitals win that game in regulation. The Flyers pull their goalie after they've been eliminated from the playoffs. And that's a tough situation right there, because in the end, it has no effect on a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins, because in the end, the Detroit Red Wings go out and they win that game, which would have eliminated them. But the Detroit Red Wings pulled off miracle after miracle after miracle. And I've got no stake in the Detroit Red Wings here, but they pulled off 3 straight miracles where they came back in games, sent it into overtime, and pulled off victories in what could have sent them to the playoffs. Instead, they got eliminated by the pulling of a goaltender in a game by a team that could not possibly make it to the playoffs. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, it didn't happen that long afterwards or whatever. But listen, go take a look on NHL benches. The coaches all have earpieces in there, all talking to their video guys. Maddie in Winnipeg is the guy behind the scenes. They're the guys who look and make sure things are happening. There's TVs everywhere. If you are handling this the way I believe it should be handled, if you're the Philadelphia Flyers and you know that you are risking eliminating another team, another city, another fan base, another organization, if you're potentially costing them playoff gate revenues, think about this if you're the Winnipeg Jets, folks. Think of it from this perspective. Then you need to handle this situation as much as possible with honor, which I believe means you have your video guys in the back. And the moment you know you are eliminated, and they're eliminated, as soon as the Detroit Red Wings score that goal, you make sure the coaching staff knows about it on the bench. And I believe it's incumbent upon this coaching staff, for the honor of the game at that stage, to not do what the Philadelphia Flyers did in this case and pull their goaltender, because it's the reason that the Washington Capitals are going to the playoffs. Now, the Washington Capitals may have gone into overtime, and they may have won it in overtime or a shootout, and this could have all been a moot point, but we don't know. We don't know how it would have turned out. And I just say, Ken, I saw the Detroit Red Wings go in, and if you want to see the most bitter non-celebration. Go watch Patrick Kane go shoot on the in the shootout as they win that game, and he turns around looking completely and totally dejected. I didn't like that scene. I thought that there's if I'm Detroit and if I'm their fan base, I'm pissed right now, because a team that was eliminated from the playoffs eliminated me from the playoffs with a move that I won't call it careless, but there needs to be, if you are going to make that move, there needs to be a very, very stern look at doing this, doing it properly, and making sure you are not doing it if there's no chance for you to win and go to the playoffs in that game.
Yeah, I don't agree. I mean, I know where you're coming from, and I agree with part of the premise. But Sean, we had the game up on Scott Billick's computer. The Flyers just about tied it 5 seconds before. They didn't pull the goalie to say, we're going to screw the opposition.
They pulled the goalie in a tie game.
Sean, Ken. They just, and it almost worked. They had the best scoring chance of the game. Lindgren Ken. Made a ridiculous save.
What did it matter?
They're why trying to win the game still.
Why are you trying to win a game that you are tied in, that you can win in overtime and you can win in a shootout, unless you need to win in regulation, which they could not, or which didn't matter anymore? It's not about them trying to win the game. They put at risk another city, another fan base's team's playoff hopes.
Yeah, I mean, Detroit had 82 games to get the point. I mean, we always boil it down to one game, and that's totally fine. I don't see this as reckless as you do. I mean, I understand the premise for sure. I think John Tortorella is trying to play to the whistle. And again, I agree with you. They should have known that it was out of hand by then. But are we sure? I mean, I didn't see the quotes from Philly. Did they say that they knew?
Just so people are, what I'm saying is it happened beforehand. When they pulled the goaltender, it was already over. The Detroit Red Wings had already tied up the game. It was over.
We know that the coach said down to Torch and said, hey, don't bother doing it. That's what I'm saying. So how do we know it's careless?
Are you not listening to what I'm saying?
I am. That's why I'm saying.
Then why are you saying what you're saying right now? Why are you making the point you're making if you're listening to what I'm saying? What I said was, I don't know if they did or they didn't know. What I'm saying is behind the scenes, and maybe this happened. But my point is, it should happen this way. They should be taking care in every single way that if it gets to a scenario by which they know they're eliminated, the Philadelphia Flyers, I think it's incumbent upon them, and it's incumbent upon any team in the NHL to properly represent the integrity of the playoff race to get that information to the bench as quickly as possible. Now, maybe they didn't. Yeah, but my point
said
is,
in the post game that he didn't know.
So, okay, I mean, so there you go. But I'm also saying that heading into that game, it should be taken out of this situation that you have your people behind the scenes. If I'm John Tortorella, I want my video group to be saying, the moment we know that this doesn't matter anymore, I need to know. And so I'm not saying that there wasn't attempts for that to happen in the background, but if there wasn't, to me, that is, you aren't honoring the game if you are not taking every single measure possible to make sure that you are properly reflecting how the standings go, trying to win a game in regulation that gets you nothing but costs another organization, I do not think is an honorable way for these things to fall.
Fair. I just, in closing, I would just say this. Detroit was in a playoff spot for a good chunk of the year, and Washington was not. So down the stretch, Washington was the better team. Did they get an extra point that helped them? Sure. But the better team down the stretch is the team going to the playoffs. So I don't have the same level of issue with it. But let's go. Let's talk about Rutger quickly here.
No, we're not going to talk about Rutger. We'll save that for the last show of the year.
Sounds good. We'll get to it.
You got it, Johnson. Got you covered. Play of the game.
Sure. I mean, it's not the traditional measure, but I thought it set the tone. I thought that the hit from Brendan Dillon on Brandon Tanev really had his teammates covered and told them that, no, this is not a intense game the same way that it was against Dallas or Colorado, but there was meaning to the game and that they wanted to get second place. And by hammering him the way that he did in the neutral zone with a clean hit, that set the tone for the game. And that's why I'm going with that as my We've Got You Covered play of the game today.
I'm going on the other opposite side of things. I'm going with, oh God, how come I can't? His name is coming to me right now. The former Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yanni Gourde
with the stick lift on Gabe Vilardi, who they pulled off that same play where he hides behind the post and it's the pass across the crease. It's a tap-in power play goal. Oh, was it Tanev? I thought it was Gourde. I thought it was
Tanev for sure.
Okay, then it was Tanev regardless. That was a team that is paying attention to the pre-scout because you could see he turns and makes a beeline towards the player knowing that there's a possibility there and gets there just in time. That was a really good play. So that one stood out to me regardless. So, hey, do you run a small business in Canada? Look to Canada's number one employee benefits plan, Chambers Plan, to give you a competitive edge. Chambers Plan is the simple, stable, smart choice for over 30,000 businesses countrywide. Visit chamberplan.ca to learn more. Ken, keg save of the game, what do you got?
Yeah, I think probably the best save is the one on Justin Schultz from the slot, and then the rebound chance for, I didn't get a great look at it. Looked like Tanev had a chance at the side of the net. It was in the second period, first period. Really good. Belmar had a chance earlier in the shift, then Schultz blasts one and it was to the side, and Hellebuck just found a way to keep it out. And I guess the one on McCann, kind of honorable mention as well. So
power play cross crease pass.
Yeah, that was McCann, I think, right?
Yeah. Sliding across by Hellebuck, that was like, he made it look easy, jumped the play before everybody else. That for me is the keg save of the game. It doesn't matter what we think, matters what you think. Share with us your hashtag the keg save of the game, and you are automatically entered to win a $50 gift certificate usable at any of the three fine keg locations here in the city of Winnipeg, each location finer than the last. And the winner, unfortunately, I have to say this, if I could take it away, I could, but them's the rules. Kenny's water bottle is walking away with a $50 gift certificate.
Well done. Well
Kenny's
done.
Water bottle. You know what to do. Direct message me at SN Sean Reynolds. I'll do my best to ignore it. Maybe I'll be able to pull it off. But send me your full name, send me your email, and I will have the fine folks at the keg send you a $50 gift certificate usable at any of the three fine keg locations here in the city of Winnipeg, each location finer than the last. Now that takes us to the TCB Lamplighter. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great candidates, all in their different way. Morrissey's pass to Kyle Connor, exceptional. Scheifele's pass to Kyle Connor, exceptional. Ehlers pass to Tyler Toffoli. Then the going to the backhand is also exceptional on the power play with 12 seconds left. But for me, that's the game winner. But for me, I think it's the Ehlers goal. It's the extra effort. You know, great shot from the slot. From Tyler Toffoli, puck goes up in the air and no one can find it. But Nikolaj Ehlers goes to the blue paint, right? This is where Ehlers has to go in the playoffs. It's not going to be end to end and, you know, weaving through 17 people. Sometimes it's just a matter of beating the defenseman to the loose puck. And he found his own rebound and banged it home by diving forward and showing extra effort. So for me, there's lots of highlight reel specials in those other three. But for me, the Ehlers goal for his 25th of the season. And Sean, the crazy thing here, Nikolaj Ehlers has zero power play goals this year. 25 at even strength, I believe. I mean, there may have been one shorthanded goal into an empty net. I don't think so. But I'm pretty sure it's 25 even strength goals, 60 points, just having an exceptional season. So I'm going with the Ehlers marker here.
Charlie Dufault, just quickly, I'm going to say, he says, hey, Sean, what do you think of the overkill in the Oilers games the other night? 9-2, what an unnecessary beatdown. I just think that we're in a league where it just seems like we're back to like a points era, and it's obvious in the results that we're getting from guys like Kucherov and McKinnon and the last couple of years that we saw, you know, Erik Karlsson last year. To me, I think this next generation of hockey isn't as concerned as, I don't know how old Charlie Dufault is here. I know that back in our era of hockey, Ken, and the hockey that we watched growing up, these are the kind of things at this kind of year, time of year, that would have ended up in being, you know, it was disrespecting your opponents and all those kind of things. And while I'm not the biggest fan of these kind of things, I think, you know, teams look at these things as points night, right? And clearly Connor McDavid was trying to get to 100 assists. So in another time, Charlie, I would have taken a look at this and I would have thought it was a problem. As stewards of the game, I'm a guy who, you know, I appreciated the kind of hard-nosed hockey. I appreciated, you know, big hits and those kind of things. I think far too many players pass up big hits. I think that there's, you know, that rough edge of intimidation that I used to really like watching in games really doesn't exist as much anymore. But that is a mark of the game that I would have played when I was young, that I would have watched growing up when I was young. all of us as hockey fans are stewards of the game, and the next generation of hockey player, I just don't think thinks like that. And so what you're talking about is when you get to, like, you know, the younger players who are coming up into the league, I don't think they're thinking this same way. I don't think they're thinking, wow, how disrespectful. I better go punch one of their guys in the mouth or do whatever. It's just, we're stewards of the game. And I think you have to just recognize at one point that the game that maybe was the ideal version of the game for you may not exist anymore. The version of that game where, you know, the Sharks would have kicked the, you know, gone out and started throwing knuckles in a game like that. I just think the young players in this game are all about the points and all about these kind of, you know, marks that different players are hitting. So I think it's a big nothing burger for them. And because it's a nothing burger for them, it's their game now. They're the ones playing it. So I think in the end, you kind of got to be good with the league where it's at and what the players in this day and age want. Ken, quickly.
Yeah, I mean, 7-goal difference is the same as the Jets game. Were the Jets disrespecting the Avalanche? No, I mean, if you don't like getting scored on, defend better. I mean, it's simple to me. And the Jets didn't run up the score the other day. You're playing hard because you respect the fact that the team can come back against you. So, I mean, again, that Connor got the 100th assist on the 9th goal. Who cares? He got 100 assists. If you didn't like it, you should have stopped him.
Okay.
I agree. The mentality has changed for sure.
I give the lamplighter to the first goal of the game. I just thought that was Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor were on another level tonight, just finding each other. And that was just a perfect example of not only Mark Scheifele getting that puck through a really, really tight space that only existed for a very short window of time, and Kyle Connor getting his stick in that window, not only lining it up, but doing it at the right time. The timing that exists on a play like that is ridiculously elite from both those players. And those two finding that kind of timing and elite playmaking between the two of them, I think, is a very good sign for the Jets heading into the playoffs. And again, what I think are repeatable goals. So that's it for me. That's my lamplighter of the game. Doesn't matter what I think. Matters what you think. Share with us your lamplighter of the game. You're automatically entered to win a frosty, delicious 8-pack of Lamplighter Amber Ale, brought to you by our friends at TransCanada Brewing Company. If you can't wait for Kenny and Rennie to gift you your own 8-pack, head on down to TransCanada Brewing Company at 11290 Keniston Avenue. Great food, great pizza, great beers, great atmosphere. It's got it all, as you will find out if you join us for our year-ender when we send her about 2 months, two Mondays out from the Jets' last game. That's when we're looking at it for. But getting to the winner of the TCB 8-pack, that would be Derek Schmidt 2703, who left the comment in the YouTube videos and comments underneath our last video. Derek Schmidt 2703, you know what to do. Direct message me at SN Sean Reynolds. Give me your full name, give me your email, and I will send you a voucher for a frosty, delicious 8-pack of Lamplighter Amber Ale, brought to you by our friends at TransCanada Brewing Company. That's it for us. Great job, chat room. What do you got, Ken?
Vancouver won the game tonight. So that
which
will
locks them up in first, which means the next game is meaningless for both teams.
Well, hang on, that's not actually accurate. If Vancouver and Winnipeg were to meet, they're 1 point separation.
Oh, that's
true. So there would be some element of home ice if the two teams met in the conference final.
Would they, or does the seeding take precedence?
I'm not sure. I thought it was points, but Vancouver did win the division. So I mean,
I think the seeding takes precedence. I think if the Jets end up going on to the conference final, it's seed one versus seed two.
Okay.
So anyway,
never mind.
Okay. That's it. Oh, Derek Schmidt. There you go. You did. You win, Derek. Make sure you get a hold of us. Okay, that's it for us. Great job, everybody. Great job, Ken.
Vancouver can still win the conference, so there is home ice at risk for them with Dallas, I believe.
No, Dallas.
If Dallas loses,
Dallas has locked up the conference title.
No, okay, it's 111-109.
111-1. Yeah, but what's the tiebreaker?
Regulator. So never mind. Some people in the chat room don't have it right. Sorry, I should have checked first.
That's twice now. You threw an anchor out of the moving car and stopped us in the middle of shutting it down for improper facts, man.
Come on, anyway, people.
Hey, If you appreciate the conversations happening in this space, please, please appreciate the contributions by our sponsors who fight to keep the conversation going in this space. That would be Vittorio Rossi, Cambrian Credit Union, Pristine Roofing, Sweet Lou Ferlin, the Johnston Group, the Keg, and TransCanada Brewing Company. Ken is saying that he thinks that there's a possibility here. I don't know. Let's just look at this quickly, okay, before we go. NHL standings. I thought I saw a Y by their name, which meant that they had There's a Y, which means what? They automatically win the... Oh, they've clinched the division.
It's only the division, buddy. That's why.
Clinch conference is the Z. Okay. All right. There you go. So there is an opportunity.
Not an anchor out of the moving car. So
there you go. Well, the first one was... okay. Anyways,
hang on one second. Do you? I mean, again, some folks are right. We don't know the schedule yet. I assume. Do we have any idea? We don't know. All right. We'll know more on Thursday. Let's go with that. I expect it would be right on, folks. Thanks for listening.
All right. Here we go. There we go. It's no Dom. The regulation wins is the tiebreaker ahead of ROW. Anyways. That's it for us. Let's shut it down. Game on Thursday. We'll chat with you after that. Talk to you later, everybody.